you're fighting here. All the place. Who are you?
The questions that we're all dying to know.
You can't handle the truth.
Hello? Hello?
You can't keep them down, no matter how hard you try.
Hey, that's the guy, and he's back for more.
Traveling into the witching hour from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, you're riding into the paranormal.
It's the dog days of summer in that cold, dark dungeon tonight. It's like triple digits, but I'm inside a nice air-conditioned, cool studio, palatial as ever. Maybe one day I'll let you come inside for a look. It's kind of top secret now, you know, considering everything that's happened. Tonight it's going to be a show of shows. It could be one for the ages. I'll be joined by Eugene Braxton as we're going to be talking about near-death experiences and about the phenomenon known as alien abduction. You know, sometimes I have people ask me what I talk about on this program, and it is pretty far out there. I will say, ladies and gentlemen, if you're new to the program, we're just getting off the floor, so we appreciate all the support you can give us. You can go to intotheparanormal.wix.com/ITP radio. And there is a support button there. It says PayPal, and you can send us some love there. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel for all the podcasts. And, of course, we're also on Spreaker, and we're on our radio affiliates. We couldn't do this show without them nearly as well. So hello to those of you on WLRU 106.9 tonight around the Hillsboro, Ohio metro. Also around Fort Davis, Van Horn, Marfa, and Valentine, Texas. You're listening on 1610 down on the radio dial, and that's Valentine Radio. So thanks, Brad, and also to Father Mike. We're powered by Radiotomy, also on the TuneIn Radio app, and I think that's all the business out of the way. Tonight, we've got Eugene Braxton, as mentioned, and we're going to be talking about near-death experiences and about alien abductions. Is there an answer to that? Eugene actually says that both of those phenomenon have been solved. So he's coming up very, very shortly. Hey, what do you think chemtrails are? We've got a poll question up for you on the Twitter page at Parabnormal Show. That's Twitter, at Parabnormal Show. You can tell us, yes, you believe in a chemtrail. No, you believe in a chemtrail. You do not believe. Or option C is, what are chemtrails? Now, of course, there are many different theories on what these actually are, but we like to bring science into it, and science tells us that this is pretty much bunk. I'm sure we've all seen chemtrails. I saw chemtrails, and actually a UFO last Saturday in the middle of the day. But whether or not these chemtrails are, you know, say the work of something secret, a shadow government, or the like. It is the exhaust that an airplane makes. You've seen an airplane do different maneuvers in the sky. Very genius people make that art in the sky. Sometimes it'll be a message of love. Hey, will you marry me? Sometimes it will be related to, I don't know, maybe a major sporting event or the something of the kind. But chemtrails, what does science say? 76 out of 77 scientists say that this is absolutely bunk. 17% of you and I, the general public, only 17% believe in a conspiracy theory related to chemtrails. The telephone number tonight is 818-672-6865. That's 818-672-6865. You can Skype the program as well. Into Paranormal is what you would type into the search area of Skype. That's how we can connect from computer to computer and sound really good. Our chat room is at intotheparanormal.wix.com/ITP radio. Do you believe in chemtrails? Yes, no, or what are chemtrails? Those are the options. I'd encourage you to go to at Paranormal Show on Twitter and click one of those. We'll be checking some of those for real-time results throughout the program tonight. Another interesting thought deals with my favorite topic, consciousness. You know, there's this thing called the afterlife. Many people think all they have to deal with is the life in and of the now, and that is, let me tell you what, very challenging for many at times. But then there's this whole thing called the afterlife. What happens to us after we die? Because as we pass on, and everybody grieves our existence, and then we go, or we've already departed, into the place known as heaven or hell, or wherever it is we go in the afterlife. Maybe we really don't go anywhere. Maybe that is just something that religion has taught us that is meant as a decoy. Because my personal thought on this all is that it is just kind of there. Our consciousness is like in a cartoon or in a comic book. There's the little air quotes bubbles over those comic book characters, basically, you know, telling you what it is they're supposed to be saying. That's kind of what consciousness is. It's this thing that lives kind of next to us and follows us around. I mean, you've probably, you know, religious people refer to it as the still small voice. Many people refer to it as intuition. And other things. It's basically a second opinion. You know, you think you're going to do something, and there's this little nudge or inkling that says, you know, you probably shouldn't do that. That is your consciousness, I believe. Because then when you die, your consciousness lives on. And that, in my mind, is the only way we can describe what happens to us after we die when it comes to afterlife communication, is through the consciousness. And I bring this up because physicists are claiming that our consciousness lives in a quantum state after death. Cambridge University, Princeton, and others are joining in on this. It is certainly a very interesting thought as well. And I usually try to find one story, at least per show, that will just kind of leave you shaking your head. And I think this is kind of one of those head-shaking kind of stories. It comes from the mysterious universe. You know, if you talk to a paranormal investigator, they will tell you that you cannot make spirits act on command. It just isn't something that is usually possible. Doesn't mean if it happens, that proves that theory wrong. It's maybe likely just a coincidence. But there is at least an effort trying using naked models, live naked models, actually to try to lure a ghost. The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts is attempting to do so. Interesting thought. Naked ladies, you know, depending on what kind of ghost we're dealing with, might actually find that a little bit attractive. I'm just guessing. I don't really know because, I haven't passed over yet. Let's move on to the next story. You know, the Zika virus, that thing that was supposedly supposed to shut down the Olympics, which, thank God, are ending, because now we can get back to the good television programs, including my favorite show of the summer. But the Zika virus was something that, again, I've talked about on this and other programs for quite some time. You know, that thing that we knew was transmitted by mosquitoes and put women, particularly pregnant women, and their young children most at risk. Mosquito-borne, also transmitted through sexual relations, was supposed to have a big effect on the Olympics. There were some athletes who, I think, did drop out because of it. But again, it really didn't cause too much of an impact. It was the thing that wasn't really a big deal first and then was a much bigger deal and then was one of the toughest emergency responses to coordinate ever. Well, on a Miami beach, there are a cluster of Zika cases, most likely transmitted by local mosquitoes in this humid, mugged heat. Federal and state officials there are considering whether to advise pregnant women to just avoid traveling to the city and possibly even all of Miami-Dade County. So there you have it, Zika virus on Miami Beach. Tonight on the program, it is going to be a very, very interesting one. We're going to be talking with a mystic who will learn much about and much with tonight. His name is Eugene Braxton. As we're going to be talking about some of his esoteric experiences that have given him knowledge and abilities that would otherwise take many lifetimes to attain, he has worked with three world authorities on solving the NDE abduction riddles. He's authored America's Mystic Solves Near-Death Riddle. And his website is BraxtonEugene.wix.com/America's Mystic. He's here on the program tonight to talk to us about NDEs, about near-death experiences, including his own, and also about the phenomenon of alien abductions. Good evening, Eugene Braxton. Welcome to Into the Paranormal. Well, are you there, Mr. Braxton?
Yes, I'm here, Jeremy.
I'm trying to find the... okay, good.
Well,
can you hear me?
I hear you 5x5.
Okay, same here.
Eugene, what is a mystic?
Jeremy, a mystic is a person who seeks a one-on-one union with God. He's mainly about merging with God and attaining that union with God.
So tell us, or walk us through your career, because you did have experiences as a child. That's when your near-death experience happened, and I recall quite a bit about it, and we'll get into that shortly. So after you maybe went through some experiences later in life, you reached a point where you had to professionally educate yourself and enter the workforce. You want to tell us about your background?
Yes, I've had done a good amount of things. I was born in Philadelphia, moved to Ohio, Kent, Ohio, at age 11. That was in the 70s, 1970, in fact. Saw the Kent State shooting thing, grew up there, went to high school, and that's the town where I had the near-death drowning. At age six, we have to jump back. At age six, I began having out-of-body experiences. This would continue until age 16, heavily. And at age 15, I had the near-death drowning in Kent, Ohio. So I would graduate. And in the 80s, as the talk about near-deaths and the paranormal became more popular. I started checking it out, listening to what other people said about it, and noticed that a lot of the things were different from mine. So I started studying it in the 80s, and near-death research started in 78. I had mine in 75, or yes, 75. So I started checking it out in the 80s. Also, I started playing around with the super strong psychic abilities that came from the near-death, from the out-of-bodies, and just being naturally psychic. But those other experiences enhanced it. And almost all paranormal experiences, whether negative or positive, do leave some after effects that get stronger after each year. So in the 80s, I started experimenting with the abilities. I kind of acknowledged it. During the teens, I had to deal with it, but I kind of submerged it. Although I started studying about it in the teenage years too. We had a psychology book around, and they had a chapter on parapsychology. So I was always interested in what was happening to me. By the 80s, I began to control and understand and recognize the different abilities and began to control them. I was still studying. I began to work with it in my 20s. And I was older, more cemented, and so the 80s was about studying what this near-death was and developing the abilities. Then in the 90s, I did some film with a film, Philly Film Office. And then I got into near-death research after seeing a good interview with a Dr. Bruce Grayson, who I found out later was the dean of near-death research. So I made sure to tell him everything I knew or remembered. That began in 97 to 2002. And then I, 97 to 99. Then I switched at 99 and began working with Dr. PMH Atwater, a female, who was a three-time near-death experiencer, who understood what I was going through and what I was explaining more, even better than Dr. Grayson, although he knew a lot too. So at the same time, I was working with Dr. David Jacobs from Temple University, where I was then working with the Temple Police Department. I worked there for 20 years, and Dr. J had been there all that time, too. So I saw some things in the near-death experience as a whole, and in mine in particular, that were anomalous to the point where I had to go to the UFO World Authority to see what he thought about certain aspects of it. And he agreed with me 100%. And so I would then study with Dr. Jacobs from 99, the winter of 99, till about maybe the fall or the summer, spring of 2011. I was urged to write the books by the world authorities and my own family. So I decided to. I was just going to keep the research at home in a closet. And I did for a few years and then began checking it out in 08. Maybe from 06 to 08, I just put it down and did films. But I was urged to, so I did come out.
And again, those three men who encouraged you were?
Well, they were, my family, then the world authorities, Dr. Atwater, Dr. Jacobs, my parents, and my son. Those were the main ones. And with them, I didn't need any more. And it felt like God wanted me to do it too. I could not have written that without his hand guiding me, describing the words. That's supposed to be an indescribable event. But it was just an unremembered event. It's not indescribable. Most people just don't remember hardly anything. And if they do, a lot of those people are first-time experiencers who may have not even had an out-of-body experience or a lucid dream. So the world authorities were looking for a childhood experiencer who had had a near-death, and that was where I came in. Mm-hmm.
So at the age of six, you have your first out-of-body experience. Can you walk us through some of your recollections of that?
Of the first experience?
Yeah.
Yeah, the main recollections or memories were of like the mechanics of the out of body, not so much the excursions or the travels. That would come later, and I remembered a lot. But the first part was the mechanics. It was almost like I was being made to see what was happening. I was always like attuned to that those things naturally. I was kind of artistic when I was young, and I was actually a bookworm until about the age of 11 when I started playing sports. But so I knew there was some kind of different world. I had felt it before as a kid in the daytime and at night. And so the first, let's see, age 6 to about 11, yeah, first 5 years, I learned all about the mechanics of an out-of-body, the paralyzations, the spirit body rising up out of the physical body, the movement that it makes. It goes straight up and then straight out towards the end of the bed where your feet would be, and it stands you up straight up on your feet. And but there's a magnetic, and I think I mentioned in our last interview, there's a magnetic, electromagnetic pulling sensation that tries to pull you back to the bed. And if you're not far away enough, you'll get pulled back in, sometimes slowly, sometimes fast. So you can lean forward a little bit. And once you get a few feet away from the bed, then you're free to walk about or float about.
Hang on right there, Eugene Braxton. We're going to have to take our bottom of the hour break. I'm hoping maybe he can locate his squeaking fire alarm and rip that battery out, because we've got another hour and a half to go with America's Mystic, Eugene Braxton. More of NDEs and alien abduction, solving those riddles tonight. Keep it right here on Into the Parabnormal.
This is Parabnormal News, and I'm Chris Fleck. A man-like creature, levitating dog, and flying cockroaches, oh my. Whatever you call it, a creature that looks to be part human is seen on video walking around very slowly like a zombie in a desert in Portugal, and then disappears behind a tree. Much to the shock of witnesses, you've got to see the video on the ITP website. Scotland's police probably won't be going back to this house anytime soon after personally witnessing a chihuahua levitate. Clothes fly across the room, lights flicker on and off, oven doors open and close on their own, and lampshades mysteriously turn upside down. A mom called them after she and her son encountered 2 days of these strange activities. Police contacted a priest who came and blessed the house. What would you do if you saw a cockroach flap its wings and fly? Reports are flying in from New York, Florida, and Texas. Experts say the heat and humidity have something to do with this. Last week, I went in search of ghost lights at Brown Mountain in North Carolina after a recent video surfaced. I spent the weekend there. No ghost lights in the sky unless you count the shooting stars. Beautiful location, though, with an overall creepy feeling. I will definitely be back there in search of the ghost lights and some relaxation. If you're in North Carolina, head on over to Brown Mountain. Even if you don't see the ghost lights in the sky, you will enjoy a relaxing night in nature and might even see a bear. I'm Carissa Fleck, Parabnormal News.
About the age of 6 is when the experiences out of body began for Eugene Braxton, America's Mystic, my guest here tonight. And he's written about them in his book, which is titled America's Mystic Solves Near-Death Riddle. And his website is linked up at my website to make it really easy. All content in one place. And we were cutting him off about the point in time where he was giving us a very vivid interpretation of that first OBE. So back to you, Eugene.
Thanks, Jeremy. Yes, we were at the point where the about between the ages of 6 and 11 is where I first started understanding the mechanics and was able to watch the mechanics of what happens when a person is out of body. And it starts with paralyzation when they're half awake, half asleep, on that brink of consciousness, where you can hear stuff in the background but are too tired to really react to it. So you're half awake, half asleep. The paralyzations start in from the toes and slowly move upwards to the legs, the hips. By the time they reach the hips, the person is just about pretty well paralyzed. And the arms and stuff also. So at this time, the fear may set in because there's a brief period, about maybe 28 seconds, 30 seconds, where you're in between the spirit world and the physical world. So your body paralyzes itself subconsciously to so that the person is fully immobilized so that the spirit body can come out. And a person would normally freak out if they felt that or saw that. So it occurs when the person is either asleep fully or going to sleep, drifting to sleep. It may feel like you're sinking through the bed, or it may feel like you're rising up. You may even hear noises and hums or musical notes or mechanical sounds. If the there are some auditory and visual hallucinations during like this 30-second period that feels like 3 minutes. But if the person remains calm in a Mr. Spock-like way, they can write out these imaginary visualizations. So the more you freak out and begin to struggle, the tighter the paralysis occurs, especially if you're in a deep sleep. The more you struggle, the tighter the paralysis occurs, and the more primal fear may set in. If you stay calm, and you can kind of, usually the only thing you can move about that time is your lungs and your stomach. So that's the perfect thing to do, is start doing some slow, deep breathings. Because if you get enough air in yourself, you can literally pop out of that. Like, you know, you have enough strength to jerk your leg and pop out of that paralysis. It's a freaky thing. And it's super scary because of the lack of control. So the paralysis is fully set in. The primal fear begins to go away. And the person notices, if they're awake enough, and those breathings will keep them awake, Jeremy, that they're beginning to feel like they're rising or even rocking from side to side. They feel movement inside their body, even though they're paralyzed. That's their spirit body beginning to come out. And sometimes it literally feels like you're being cranked out of a machine. By some kind of hand crank machine. You can a lot of times hear mechanical noises in the background. But what happens that you can see is supersedes that. So you notice that you're rising up out of your body, just like the levitation scene in The Exorcist. That's supposedly controlled not by the subconscious, but by the superconscious or the God force who and the life force too, because when people have out of bodies, when people go to sleep and get rest, they don't get rest from knocking out and going to sleep. They get rest because their spirit body comes out of the physical through a dream or through an actual out of body and recharges in the natural electromagnetic energy that's in the air itself. It's called prana by the Indians. And we are probably more electromagnetic than we are water, and so is this universe and planet. Everything is about electricity and magnets. And so electromagnetism can be good, though. So we actually recharge in the air through the electromagnetism, and that's where we get rid of colds. That's where we have a deep sleep. That's where artists get their inspirations, and Einstein figures out his formula. He used to take doze off on the train and take naps, and a mathematical formula would just pop into his head, and that felt right and looked right. So then he'd go home and check it out statistically, and it was right, even advanced. John Lennon did the same thing. So so do athletes. They'll see a perfect move in their dreams or in their mind's eye during that half awake, half asleep period, and they can repeat it in real life. A marksman with a rifle or pistol, an archer, anyone like that, or a writer, anyone. But it's so if the person is, if their level of consciousness is high enough or aware enough as they're going to sleep, they can have this happen. And the paralysis is the first sign that you're about to have an out of body. It's the primary thing that happens. It's a signal that you're going to have an out of body. So the spirit body is lifted out, then it slides over to your right above your body, and you can literally look down and see yourself. Whether it be your spirit body looks down, or they have what's called a spherical consciousness, where if you want to see something behind you, all you have to do is think about it and you can see it. Suppose you wanted to see how your wife was doing. You turn left and see the scene right there. You could just really just look through time. So that vision that happens in out of body, out of experiences is fantastic. And that needs to be studied a lot. But the person comes out, you feel yourself being lifted up near the ceiling. You come out to the front of the bed. This force stands you up. And then after a few steps or two, or you can normally walk out of it. Sometimes if you feel a little pull, like it's trying to pull you back to the bed, just lean forward and you can walk away from it. So once you're free, then you're free to either fly about invisibly in this world or create an imaginary world of your own choosing. It's pretty interesting. It's connected with the dreams and lucid dreaming, too.
I want to expand this topic further, but there is a loud screeching noise in the background. Any way we can get that taken care of, Eugene?
I'm in a fully silent. Oh, wait. Okay, yeah, I see. It's the smoke alarm. I didn't even hear that.
Can I give you a minute to like pull the battery out of there and?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
All right, so Eugene, you go ahead and do that, and I'll check back with Eugene Braxton in just a moment because I've got headphones on, and you know now we got that crisper, clearer audio signal, and so I know that is amplified. And I wanted to make sure that we could get that taken care of. I heard it as well as you, so we'll get back to Eugene Braxton here in just a little bit after he can just go pull the battery out of there. I think we're safe for the next hour, 17 minutes. I mean, our conversation might light the place on fire. You never know. But in that case, I will call 911 for Eugene live here on the air, so we don't have to worry about that. 818-672-6865. That's 818-672-6865. We've been talking with Eugene Braxton, America's Mystic, about OBEs and about NDEs. If Eugene is back with us, a chance that he may not be yet, but if he is back with us, we're going to talk about the NDE, which happened in 1975 when he was about 15 years old. Right, Eugene?
I was 15. Yes, Jeremy.
And so was this on a family vacation? Set the stage for us.
This was at a youth group picnic. And we had high school friends, girls and guys, who went. So for us, it was like just a day to get away on the weekend. With a church retreat or a day retreat just to really just have fun. We were teenagers, you know, and it was just like a break from the neighborhood or whatever. And so we went swimming, and I jumped feet first in a lake, and I went straight up high and came in straight down like a diver, and I got stuck in the muck underneath the dock of that lake. And then I sucked in like trash cans full of dirty lake water, and slowly went through the entire drowning process. I waited for a while. I held my breath as long as I could, and then I let it all out. And I filled up with water, but was still remained alive and conscious for a while afterwards. And then, just like in the out of bodies, because I was about to have one, the paralysis set in. And, you know, I was shivering, and at one point I couldn't move my eyes, but I still looked with the peripheral to see if anyone was going to come down, swim down and get me. I don't think anyone even noticed. I know they didn't because no one said nothing when I came up. But so I was able to watch very slowly, and time slowed down as I approached that death. I was able to watch every little detail that happened because a lot of them mimicked what had happened either in dreams or in the out-of-body experiences. And the near-death is a spiritual out-of-body. So I had greater clarity, greater observation, greater control of emotions. And was just able to, and I was that way naturally. just able to calmly observe it like some kind of teenage Mr. Spock, just watching it fully. Because I was always, I liked that kind of stuff. And it was weird. It was weird watching it because, you know, you're panicking and there's primal fear that sets in. And you can feel that I'm not going to make it through this one. And then there's a sudden opposite switch. And you feel that everything's all right. You've accepted whichever way it goes. The struggle for life and death is over. And you're just going to, you can't do nothing anyway, so you might as well just let it happen and see if, you know. You always struggle literally to the end, even because you can feel that kind of gravitational force that I was talking about with the OBE. You can feel yourself being pulled. The person, if they die slowly, can also feel every organ shutting down, like little candles. And you knew that was the liver, the right lung, the spleen. And you could feel them shut. You could feel your body slowly shutting off. And at that point, especially if along with that calming, accepting of it, all physical pain is gone too, which was a relief because I was shivering on the cold, dark muck of that lake. It was, and they covered me like a little blanket when I fell down against it. My knee was still stuck in the muck. Covered me like a blanket. My teeth were chattering. I couldn't move, but the teeth were moving. And after enough of that, there was a sudden stop where I couldn't feel any physical pain. I could still see and think, but the pain sensations had stopped. And I was glad, and I felt warm and stuff, cozy, almost like a sleepy-like state. And you're always hoping and stuff, but that moment came because I could hear my heartbeats. And they were going slower and slower and slower. Until they went from about maybe slow beating or normal beating to about maybe one beat every 12 seconds or so. Really slow, and it corresponded with the organs shutting down. So the time is running out. And then some of the last senses to remain was, the last one was the hearing. And before that, the eyes. Well, they actually stopped at the same time because I heard at the point of death, and I could feel myself being pulled into like a sleep-like swoon. At the point of death, the eyes shut. And there was a loud booming sound and everything went black. And that's when I flatlined underwater and died. Then there was a period of just nothingness. You know, no kind of, no personality, no soul. There was just nothingness, absolute zero. And then I popped awake softly and slowly. And as my consciousness dawned, my spiritual body began to rematerialize in spiritual form. I could see it sparkling, and I could see the molecules forming my invisible spirit body until it was solidly full. And so I saw that the spirit body had the deviations in it. You just don't go from physical to solidly spiritual. And I saw that the deviations took approximately 5 seconds, and it corresponded with the dawning of my consciousness. And so that was interesting. Also, Jeremy, because we talked about a lot of stuff in the last interview that I never talked about before. This I really never mentioned in the interview. Right as I was regaining consciousness after death, I woke up in a gyroscope-type sphere, just like Da Vinci's Diluvian Man. And also similar to the sphere that Jodie Foster got into in the movie Contact, exactly like that, except mine was big enough, like Da Vinci's sphere, to put my hands up. And I thought about that for years, and it wasn't until maybe a couple of years ago that I actually learned what it was. But that regaining consciousness after death was the first of about 12 stages. And I'm sure we can hit them all that I went through. This was super surreal. I was floating. I was in my invisible spiritual body form. I could think. I had my same personality. I was awake. I had a control factor. I had about 50-50 control. And I was watching them. Like they were after I regained consciousness after death. There's a point where I call it the realization of time and space. When I woke up after death and my spirit body had solidly formed, I realized that I did exist because I was thinking and I was my actual self with the same personality. So I knew I was somewhere in space or some type of dimensional location. I was located somewhere and alive. I didn't know what time it was, Jeremy, until I looked down, which is what most people do. I saw my dead body at the bottom of the lake, and I realized and remembered I had just died. So I realized what time I was in, the time of death or the afterlife, and the space was the death of the location was really the astral and in the astral, you can see into the physical more so than the physical into the astral. But I realized where I was and what was happening. And after that happened, I was suddenly, and there was a lapse of consciousness. And in any kind of dream or any kind of paranormal experience, any kind of lapse of consciousness should be like noted and thought about and remembered and reflected upon. Because a lot happens in the things that we can't see than in the things we do see, especially in those esoteric dimensions. And it's almost better to not use your eyes and use your feelings and thinking first. Your feelings primarily, because they're always right. The brain can be tricked psychologically or with spiritual illusions, and so can the eyes. But your feelings will always tell you if something's wrong, if something's good, if something's half and half, you know, that's the best way to go by your feelings and to control them too. It was a lapse in consciousness, and I found myself in the life review room where near-death experiencers say that their life is reviewed by an unseen presence. There's also a mediator type figure there, exhorting in your behalf all the good things that you have done, said, or thought. And the mediator is like a super messenger, you know, who is speaking in your behalf. And so the life view was interesting, too, because of the multi-dimensionality. With me, they had me floating, hovering in midair in this room that I could not see beyond the immediate vicinity. I was able to draw this, what they call room, life review room, although there was no ceiling and no floors, just like a tire-like shape of the room, like an oval. And it spun around like those carnival rides that you get in and you attach yourself to the side of the thing. It's like a tire and it spins you around and around. Now, at this point, hovering in midair still, yet the thing spinning around and around, these what would be flat screens were on the insides of the bands, say band of a tire-like or oval-like ring. And so there were these flat screens there, and they showed you everything you said in one, everything you thought in the other, and everything you did in the third one. And the repercussions that those actions had on others, you felt as you saw them. And it happened three-dimensionally, where you could see all of them at the same time in your mind's eye. Just like a deck of cards, when you shuffle them, you can see all the numbers at once. It was like that. And then the fact that you're hovering. And the life review was actually a setup where your life is being told and reshown to you because you're about to be judged, as you know, history has always said what happened, that judgment day, that judgment. And when God comes to judge the person, he first, being God, forgives them fully. And then the fair judgment. A lot of people, I think that God's going to strike them down with a lightning bolt or something like that. But his primary and sole requirement, there are two others. I could just say, he first asked the person, what have you done for others? That's always good with him. He then asked them, what have you done to improve yourself? And then the most important question that'll get you in, literally, is if you have believed in him while alive. And of course, he knows the answer. And if it's yes, you're automatically in heaven. And then again, you are, that scene changes. Once you're in, the scene changes. And you always want to check the lapses in consciousness because you want that continuity of consciousness where you remember every sequential event in a dream, out of body, or near death. But the lapses were noted. So once the person says, yes, I always believed in you, before, just about before you finish that last word, you're in. And God prepares you. These are the stages. God, and I can list them off later. God prepares you for the meeting. You just don't get in and then go up to see him and mix in with him. You have to be cleansed physically, spiritually. And the person is enhanced, altered, repaired, fixed in every physical and moral way. And this comes from the white lights. And they have Dr. P.M.H. Atwood, one of the world, the female world authority, spoke of the difference between the white lights and the white light, like the Savior.
All right. All right, hang on right there. Eugene Braxton will be back with him, America's Mystic. Rolling into the second hour of the program tonight, I want you here till the end because we are just getting going on the near-death phenomenon. Alien abduction phenomenon, solving both riddles tonight here with Eugene Braxton. Riding with you on this Saturday into Sunday in some places, into the paranormal that is. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Major strike in here. All the place. Holy.
Somewhere between abnormal and paranormal.
I have felt like something is near me, kind of a eerie feeling.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Jeremy Scott asks the questions that we're all dying to know.
You can't handle the truth!
Hello? Hello?
You can't keep them down, no matter how hard you try. Traveling into the witching hour from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, you're riding into the paranormal.
Yeah, I'm interested whether or not you have had either an out-of-body experience or a near-death experience. If you have, let's compare stories. 818-672-6865. 818-672-6865 is our call-in number. You can Skype into Paranormal as well. My author, my book, my guest tonight is author of the book, America's Mystic Solves Near-Death Riddle. We're talking with Eugene Braxton. BraxtonEugene.wix.com/America's Mystic, and you can find him at Twitter, either Near Death Solved or at America's Mystic. And he also has a Facebook page. Look up America's Most Experienced Mystic or Eugene Braxton, and you will find him there. Don't miss Paranormal News coming up with Carissa Fluck. That will be at the bottom of the hour. My guest on the program next Saturday night will be Tom Pettit and Ken Pfeiffer. Ken for his weekly UFO sightings report from MUFON, of course. And also Tom Pettit, an investigator of the paranormal, of UFOs and more. We're going to be talking about UFOs around nuclear sites, a very storied history. Preston Dennett will join me next Sunday night. That's right. It's my first Sunday show live. We'll do that the last week of the month, which means Saturday and Sunday right here. Same place. Our affiliates on radio and on the Internet. Sunday, Preston Dennett next week, ET and UFO Encounters. Eugene Braxton has been telling us about his experiences of OBEs from about 6 to the age of 16 years old. And then at the age of 15, he had a near-death experience. where he basically saw his dead body at the bottom of a lake. And I'm interested, Eugene, if you believe there to be a connection between your out-of-body experiences and your NDE.
Yes. The NDE is a spiritual out-of-body, and the OBE is like a younger brother or sister, baby brother or sister. They're both out of bodies. One is just spiritually inclined, and the other may be a normal one where you're just there's no kind of, you know, spirituality at all. You're just floating around the city or going to, you know. But the out of body can be a spiritual one too. But the NDE is definitely a spiritual one. It's, you know, it's all about God and meeting Him and passing that ultimate test and continuing on.
Your outlook going forward after that NDE at 15 was what? I mean, obviously you were heading in towards high school, and not many kids, I probably would guess, at that age would have had a near-death experience. Is it something that you didn't talk about for a while publicly?
Yeah, I didn't say anything to anyone except one friend, Dave Horning, a track star with me, high school friend, and he was the only one I told. And I didn't even tell my mom, my parents, about any of this, the dreams or anything. They saw I had sleep difficulties, but we had kind of like a lean on me type of father. And you just had to get up and continue on. But no, I kept it to myself to about age 25. Then I told my mom. And I, because in the 70s, you really couldn't talk about coming out of your body or the bed shaking and stuff like that without them thinking you're crazy.
Well, I mean, it's hard even today, but it is more accepted now than it was then. That was me blowing up Eugene Braxton's phone with notifications on Twitter and Facebook. I tagged him, so there you go. Eugene, as you said, about 12 stages of consciousness you believe you went through?
Well, there were 12 stages in the near-death experience, like 12 stages that a person might go through if they could fully remember it or did fully remember it. And there's 12 sequential events that happened. They used to think there was no random order. They just were haphazardly happened. There's a particular set, and a logical set of sequences that progress higher and higher and higher until that merging, that marriage with God. And the person does merge interdimensionally with God and His essence. And some of that rubs off and comes back to you, you know, in when you're on this physical earth. But that's the height of it. That's the zenith. The reconsciousness after death is good. Being judged by God is a mixture of primal fear and primal ecstasy, because on the one hand, you could be just in a coma-like death sleep for the rest of existence. But on the other hand, the one who could save you from all of that is coming now. So that's an interesting thing. And with heavy, ecstatic emotions, so ecstatic that the world authorities felt that it was of a controlling force. But the controlling of God was controlling, but loving too. You were never hurt or endangered or even in fear. The near-death experiences don't even want to come back here. They want to stay there. And it's almost nothing but there's a happiness and love. But the person in those things always has to watch out for extreme emotions, whether it be fear or ecstasy, because ecstasy is a trap too. I think I told you that quote where human beings were created by the Creator in such a way that ecstasy is the only dependable mode of conduct / control for sentient beings. And human beings were created by the Creator in such a way that ecstasy is the only dependable mode of conduct or control for sentient beings. And ecstasy is also associated with the process of transformation between life and death. So it's an interesting thing, and there's a lot of interwoven happenings, and it all ties in together, especially when you have that universal God force acting in your behalf, whether understanding it, writing about it, remembering it, or anything like that. So that God contact, that's like the height of the near death, but there's all the other elements are outstanding too, like the white lights, you know, that where you're bathed and purified. That's where the universal consciousness, knowing everything, comes in. Also, that's when, Jeremy, when the three minds of man, the conscious, subconscious, and superconscious, are all interact as one, but separately. Like you can, I had that happen on my way up towards the white lights, where I could see the see and feel the physical earth. I was in my spirit body form, which is that's the subconscious. This subconscious is the mind of the spirit body. I was in my spirit body form, and I was also connected with that one universal feeling that's connected with that God force. And that's when humans pray, they connect immediately to God. They just bypass the subconscious. And you can always reach that highest force just when you direct your attention towards it. And it's a good thing with strong after effects. And the near death leads to other psychic experiences, like UFO.
But say that again, like what?
Yeah, the near death leads to other psychic experiences, like UFO encounters.
You've encountered UFOs?
Yeah, I've seen three.
Okay, let's start with number one.
All right. The first one happened when I was 17 or 18. I was riding with a friend in Kent, Ohio. We're going to the store. And we stopped at this intersection. That's normally crowded, you know, normal. It's normal. It has a baseball field, softball this summertime, Saturday night or Friday. And we stopped at this corner. I said, "Look, Roger." And he was driving, and just like at the drive-in, I sat on the window of my driver's, you know, of the passenger side, and looked over the roof of the car at this UFO. And it was one of the flying saucer flat types. And then time kind of, the time bent where everything was still. I could see peripherally that there were car lights on to my right, but they did not move the entire time. We couldn't take our eyes off of the thing. And then what was later known to be a very subtle lapse in consciousness, we were able to see it rise up into the air and take off. But something happened while we were kind of frozen in that space, because we both showed the after effects after in the weeks to come afterwards. Like at one point, I was 19, I remember, I burst out crying right in front of my mom, and she could see that something was wrong. And I didn't know what had happened. And I didn't include it with what we saw. There's a lot of things happening in the teenage years that were unwanted and super mystical. And I just wanted to do the normal teen things, you know, chase girls, party, get out of school and stuff like to play sports and stuff like that. But they kept persisting, and I had literally asked for them at age 9. And I got what I asked for. You always do. But the near death, all those things are impressive and have after effects, from the haunted house to a dream. Dreams is the primary method by which human beings experience communication with the Creator. That's, if anyone wants to get into that, dreams would be the perfect way to start. And then where the person becomes occurrence prone, after having one experience, it brings on others. And those experiences magnify and heighten your psychic abilities many times over. So it's definitely good to get into those fields of study.
We invite you to take part, 818-672-6865. That's 818-672-6865. You can Skype into Paranormal. My guest, and I'm Jeremy Scott, is Eugene Braxton, America's Mystic. That was one UFO encounter. How about the second UFO encounter, Eugene?
Okay. I was, again, in Ohio, and that's like a hotbed, just like Pennsylvania, of UFO activity. So I was either coming home or going to work. I worked at SeaWorld at the time, or Geauga Lake, some amusement park. And a blue sphere flew over my car from behind. I could see it in the headlight, the rear mirror, from behind. And it was floating, bouncing, just like that Steven Spielberg movie. It flew up over the car real softly and then zoomed ahead up the main town road that I was going in. I was near Hudson, Ohio. And that was the second one. And I literally just submerged. I said, wow, that was weird. And just forgot of that. Because, again, I was a teen. I had other things to do. But I thought that was weird. The third one, Jeremy, me and my son were driving near the Philly airport. He had his football pads on. And we saw what looked like the planet Saturn. So as we looked at it, it moved into our atmosphere without us seeing it move. It was suddenly at 10 o'clock, then 12, then 3, then right over the bridge. And as we watched it, initially in the sky, the Saturn-like rings disintegrated and became the sphere. And his story differs slightly than mine, and he doesn't even really like to discuss it, but I remember what I saw, and it bounced across the highway and went down into some marsh. Again, we just dismissed it as some weird kind of thing, not thinking it was a UFO. This was like the early 90s, and where the spears were just starting to come out fully, as opposed to the flying discs, flying saucers. So we just thought that was weird, and then continued on our way, because we were going into town, and we had business to take care of. But we later heard about other reports of the same thing. And a month before that, Jeremy, to the day, we had an extreme haunting at a historically haunted house in Philadelphia, which is an old city. So those were the three. And they are deep, where the time thing slows down. Like, we were on this bridge, and the cars were going like 60, burning to the Eagles game or whatever. And we were under 10 miles an hour. No one hit us, and no one even noticed it. But it was right above the bridge, within like 20 feet of the top of our car. And we thought it was weird that no one slowed down because we did. And that was a weird thing. And the slight differences between what he saw and what I saw, but those UFO encounters are weird. The first one, there was no sound, just like an electric humming, like that. And then the after effects later. And there were some dreams and stuff too, but all those experiences are interesting, and they happen with me a lot, so I like to check them out and see what other people think.
Yeah, I actually saw a UFO last Saturday. It was the middle of the day, and I was actually riding in the back seat of a car along an interstate, and there was a big light that was shining down from the sky, very, very bright. Of course, it was a hot day, and I just thought it was the sun, but then there was this ring. And then next to it are chemtrails. Of course, I talked about those earlier in the program. Only 17% of those surveys say, I believe in chemtrails. And pretty much every scientist they talked to said, yeah, it's a bunch of bunk. Actually, it's coming up in Carissa's newscast at the bottom of the hour, Paranormal News. So make sure you stick around. Eugene Braxton, my guest, America's Mystic. From UFO encounters back to, I guess, your near-death experiences. You saw your dead body there at the bottom of the lake. What was your next memory, Eugene?
After seeing my dead body, Jeremy, I realized that I was still alive in spirit form. And I was super glad, you know, and I remembered that I had just died. I didn't consider the earth at all, because everything seemed all right there. And things, events just led me to other events. But I was glad that I was not really dead. And I saw that we do live after death. And the OBEs can show that too, because you're fully outside of your body. You can look down at your body during an OBE and see yourself sleeping. But the first memory after that was being super glad that I was alive. And everything else that has been said about the after death, I saw was true too. I had heard about the stories, but I like to see stuff literally before I believe it. And so much happened to me during my life that again and again, I saw that a lot of all of these things, most of these things are real. But it's an interesting and eerie thing. And everyone's interested in it now. And I guess because maybe the churches are not doing their job and explaining things to them about this universe, about their minds and about their worlds. And the psychiatrists aren't either. The psychiatrists are fully clueless about this field. Not all of them, but they're not even allowed to believe in God. Some do, like Dr. Mack. But most of them aren't. There were some good ones, like Jung, he was a good one, and some others. But religion and psychology need to step up and get information and give it to the people, because the people are finding it out for themselves now. They're not waiting for any doctor to tell them, you know, what's happening with their own bodies, minds, and souls, especially if those doctors don't initially believe it themselves anyway. They're not gonna, you're not going to find what you don't believe in. But it's definitely a field everyone should check out and try. And there's a difference between mysticism and the occult, where mysticism is only about God or higher spirituality. And the occult may have may deal with anything from witchcraft to devil worship to the Wicca women. So occults, the mysticism is focused only on God and attaining that. And then the psychic after effects are just free gifts that should be literally ignored as the person gets higher and higher to that God source. Because that's an never-ending stream of consciousness, knowledge, information. And speaking of information, the white lights give off information. And they've proven that, even though they're a couple thousand years behind, they've proven that scientifically, that information is stored in light.
All right, Eugene, we've only got a minute left before we hit our news, bottom of the hour news break, which will take us into Paranormal News with Carissa Fleck. I understand on your website, you actually have a deal for your book that will be cheaper than if, I guess, they buy it at Amazon. So if they head to your book, head to your website, rather, they can pick up your book for, what, $10?
Yes, I'll autograph it personally.
Fantastic. And again, that website is BraxtonEugene.wix.com/AmericasMystic. When we come back, we are going to get into the alien abduction phenomenon and more. Who knows what else we might encounter. So stick it right here for more Into the Paranormal. I'm Jeremy Scott.
This is Paranormal News, and I'm Chris Fleck. Do you believe chemtrails are anything more than just a conspiracy theory? A new survey asked people worldwide whether or not they believe in the global conspiracy theory. Just 17% said yes. The other 83%, along with prominent researchers, say otherwise. In data published by researchers from the University of California, Irvine, the Carnegie Institution for Science, and the clean energy nonprofit Near Zero, all but one of 77 scientists have debunked the chemtrail conspiracy. The husband of a woman who was possessed by a demon told a pastor who was called to their home for an exorcism that she had made a pact with the devil and had been reportedly tormented by evil spirits for months. She's seen on video withering around on the floor. The exorcist makes the woman repeat him as he uses his hands and ointment to expel the demons. She had opened a portal to the spirit world to experiment with the occult. Has a vacationer caught evidence of Nessie? The 28-year-old mother says her eyes popped out of her head when she saw a mysterious ripple on the surface of Loch Ness in Scotland. She grabbed her camera and took a few pictures of a blue creature swimming across the lake. She says it disappeared as she went to zoom in. You can see it for yourself online. No rest for the weary this weekend. I'm reporting live from the infamous Horsefly Chronicles house. This case seems to be never-ending, as I've been a part of it for 3 years now. A strange voice was caught on video by homeowner Phil Saratusa. In the video captured in the window, you see a face move and change shapes. I will be in Pennsylvania this weekend to investigate the home that put me on the map. My findings will be made available for the public, and if I capture anything, Jeremy will be the first to know. Next weekend, I will be reporting live at the event at the Haldeman Mansion in PA. I'm a guest speaker, so this should be an exciting time at this almost sold-out event. I'm Carissa Fleck, Paranormal News.
Eugene, we've got the book deal that folks can get a signed copy of going to BraxtonEugene.wix.com/America's Mystic or by clicking on the link inside the show notes for this episode, number 172, with Eugene Braxton at my website, into the paranormal.wix.com/ITP radio. They can follow you on Twitter. They can like you on Facebook. Anything else you would like to promote at this said time?
The website, Twitter, Facebook. I think that covers it for now, yeah.
Fantastic. So, Eugene, you say you have solved the near-death experience. What do you believe a near-death experience really means or really is?
I think the near-death experience is like a sneak peek of the afterlife. I think it's like a temporary visit to the life after death and all those other dimensions. I think the near-death is a visit to the higher astral realms that literally surround us, you know, and penetrate this world. And so that's what the near-death, it's like an avenue to higher dimensions.
A sneak peek of the afterlife. I like that explanation, that description. I haven't heard it like that before, so it really kind of paints a picture for me. I do want to talk about your thoughts on the alien abduction phenomenon as well, but there were three stories in particular that as I go through the news each week, providing the updates for Carissa and also just for general show material, things that, you know, I think I'm going to want to talk about on the program. I do save some of them when I know that I'm going to have somebody like Eugene Braxton on. So here's a couple of headlines that I have gathered over the past couple of months as they relate to the near-death experience. And since Eugene has had one at the age of 15 when he drowned and then came back to life, what a perfect person to ask. Belgian researchers have analyzed the experiences of 400 people around the world and found that experiences tend to be similar regardless of culture. Your response, Eugene?
I think the patterns are similar, but the individual experience is culturally based. And people, you know, Chinese people see their God, Africans see their God, Hispanics theirs, in their way. Just like a child sees a grandfather figure or a scientist may see a sphere of consciousness. It's but they're similar in the stages, the patterns, the events. They just don't know enough. They don't even know what stages there are. One scientist admitted he's the world authority in out-of-body experiences. He said, regarding consciousness, he said, we don't even know what consciousness is. And Dr. Ken Marine, one of the near-death authorities, said, we are aware that something exits the physical body upon death. But what that something is, we'll have to leave up to others who have a better understanding. So after all that time, about 40 years, the public literally had memorized the five things that they say happens. You know, you come out of your body, you see loved ones, you have a life review, and you meet a godlike figure. And so that's what they had year after decade after decade after decade. So now it's the 2000s, 2000, almost 17, it's time for some advanced real meat and potatoes. Raw data, not stories and stuff like that. People want the changes in the physiology of their spirit body. They want to know what levels of consciousness are and how they change in their near death from stage to stage. They want to know what God looks like, how to merge in with God, what happens after you die, to the detail. And my book provides all that.
And, Stephen Lorries, who is one of the researchers cited in this story, which comes from the Metro out of the UK, says that near-death experiences, it suggests that they're actually biological rather than religious. And he says that it's possible to actually induce a near-death experience artificially.
This might be one of the scientists who doesn't believe in God at all, or might even fully argue against it. And a lot of things in that way, what you don't believe in, you'll never reach anyway. It's hard to solve something that you don't believe even exists. So I'm not surprised he said that. And they believe, scientists should actually stick to like making cures for medicine and stuff. Leave the higher things to the spiritualists, the religious people, the psychics, the mystics, and whatnot like that, the Mother Teresa's. They should stick to science and let the others stick to spirituality. Although it would be good if science and mysticism did merge, kind of like what Dr. Jacobs and I did. He sounds like a non-believing. There have been many doctors and scientists who have had near deaths and report that they were wrong in the opposite way, that there is a God. Even Stephen Hawking now declares that there is a God. And after saying there was no God, he had some serious misfortunes, lost his job, lost his wife, lost his house. He kind of got broke, but not completely. Because God's pretty cool. He gives you second chances more than anyone else would. So, and Stephen Hawking now believes. So, there will always be scientists who will say that, no, it doesn't happen. But then if not, why are they studying it? And the scientists want to prove that there's life after death. But the religions and spiritualities have long known that there is. And the individuals who had these things happen to them, Abraham Lincoln had near deaths. So like with them, it doesn't even matter if they believe or not. They should talk to like PMH Atwater and Dr. Grayson, who've been doing this all their life. Dr. Atwater died 3 times. And if you die, that spiritual science always lags behind spirituality and always will. Because you can't, when you work with God, you are three-dimensional as compared to what man can do with his normal mind. And I've worked with them. They're just what they are, you know, guys who work on the university and want to keep their tenure.
We always hear it somehow.
Wait, hang on. That was not supposed to play right there, but it started to play on its own. And I'm talking about some audio that I wanted Eugene Braxton to hear actually coming up next. It kind of jumped the shark on me just a little bit. This is a professor who has injected magic mushrooms, actually, to, quote, help with near-death research. And we'll get his name. That's Professor Stephen Lorries. He's 48 years old. And then we'll get Eugene Braxton's reaction to his comments right now.
I wanted to experience that for myself. Of course, I don't want to nearly die. So there's different situations like fighter pilots who take a lot of G-forces also have some of these experiences. So I went in this giant centrifuge until I lost consciousness. I was injected magic mushrooms, psilocybin, which also makes you feel very strange. And that was the first time for me.
Okay, so first time for him taking magic mushrooms as part of near-death research. I'm interested what Eugene has to say about that. You think it's kind of wacky?
Yeah, it's too Jimi Hendrix, too Morris, and Janis Joplin. And he might be from that age group. We were kids then. But any researcher or scientist would tell him those results, if he could remember them under those conditions, would be completely invalid because he was drugged at the time. A near-death experience happens to straight when people are straight. And so you can't, anytime you have to take a drug to get some kind of spiritual high, that's nothing. That's really a psychedelic trip. You can't tell if you're seeing reality or if it's the mushrooms. You know, and the guy said mushroom more than one and like injecting it and stuff. That's wild, you know, and sounds desperate. If he really woke up, he would see all the advances that have been made in near-death research. And I could see if he's wanting to try it himself just to see if it's real. And it is real. There's millions of near-deathers could tell him that. He said also that he doesn't want to die, but you have to die. He's going to die anyway. So if he's really down with his research, he would fully inject himself and really die. Like that movie Flatliners, just don't, you know, get high and let the university pay for it. If you're really going to do it, strap yourself to something and shock yourself out and then have a doctor shock you back. Don't just take a trip and say you experienced something because you really didn't.
I want to hit pretty hard in our final moments here on this program. I don't want to just glaze over something that folks probably saw in the show page for tonight's show and on social media as well. A man who says that he has not only solved the near-death experience, but also the alien abduction phenomenon. And I'm just afraid that we're only going to be able to even scratch the surface in the remaining 10 or so minutes that we have. But what do you mean by that, Eugene?
Oh, is that me who said that quote? No, I'm just kidding. It's like people, the near-death was solved. And in solving the near-death, I was able to understand a lot about the alien UFO abduction experience. And of course, studying with the World Authority for 12 years helps, one-on-one, three times a week for 12 years. And then what I knew, and from out of bodies and the near death. So, but there's always more to things that a person might think initially. And the person wants to look things over two and three times, suggesting that there may be more to that than previously considered, and there was in both the near-death and the UFO things. But as far as UFO research has done more, and they've been out longer, but they're working faster than the near-death researchers. Both are selling things, but the near-death researchers are and it's competitive, are moving fast and doing a lot of good work. As far as being solved, with the UFO research, we got to have some concrete answers now. Like, we can't wait another 80 years. It's been almost, it's been about 80 years since, 1949, 47. And the people definitely deserve to know who these, the five, you know, who, what, where, when, and how. And with the second book, we've covered at least those five basic who, what, where, when, and how. And it's agreed upon by other governments, religious and non-religious scientists, government scientists, even the FBI agrees with what we've come up with. And it's normal, basic common sense and deep research. With the near depth, some things had to be divinely revealed. But with a UFO, it's just a matter of deduction and observation. It's easy to see what that thing is. All you got to do is look at it and look at what it does and what it doesn't do. And they're doing more than what it's. That's the alien abduction thing is a messed up thing. Yes.
Could it be just an OBE or an astral projection, or is it because the recollections are more vivid than that, that you would say no to that question? Although I would rebut that many of these abduction memories are not brought forward until there is a regression done.
Yes, Jeremy. And a lot of people are into regressions. Dr. J asked me if I wanted one. I said no, because some things might not need to be remembered. But I think anyone can recall memories and recollections, whether they have to remote view it or whether they have to understand their seven memory systems better. And there's ways we can exercise our memory, our retention, our clarity of memory in a lot of different ways. And the book goes into that too. The memory is even more submerged with UFO experiences than near death, and with good reason. There's a lot of just demonism that is happening with that. People have good near-death, UFO encounters, but I'm dealing with the negative ones, and they're extreme. People are getting freaked out because they don't know, they can't tell if it's related to, demonic activity or what, and it shows itself fully. It's something when you just understand everything at once. Instead of dissecting things into parts, just good to look at the whole. And when you focus on something, you'll begin to merge into it and see it, comprehend everything all at once. And we've answered the five main questions of the who, what, when, where, and how with this alien abduction thing. And a lot of people agree with us. And the experiencers are starting to turn and agree with us, you know?
Do you believe that you have been victimized? And by victimized, I mean taken by a UFO, on board a UFO, by an extraterrestrial?
I can remember a lot of incidents where I was struggling with them, where I was being controlled by them, where I learned from them. And I even have Dr. J verified. I have some huge abduction scar marks on my thighs, the inside of my thighs. And they're big, web-like, not really noticeable unless you look at them. And they can be stretched out. So, I've been attacked physically and spiritually. And these things are spiritual in nature. They're psychological in method. And it appears fully that they're demonic in origin. So I could see governments not wanting to tell that to people. But that's literally what has happened. And these aren't some beings in a metal ship coming from an actual planet where they live and stuff. These are interdimensional beings, and they are preying on people psychologically, psychologically. And it's a game that can't be played with us. But believing in that God force help is a powerful protector in that. They can't take that. And they flee and jerk away from that just when you think about it. So that's one good defense. The memory is another, but we've got to know more. Instead of going out in some field and calling UFOs in, we've got to find out what these beings are, where they came from, what they want from us, how they do it to us, what they do to us, why, and when. And we believe we have. And I've been with Dr. J for a while, and he wanted to come out with me in 99 with this. I said, no, let's do the near death first, because there's a full tie-in. And it's happened before. Only once and twice, but in big cases, like the Betty Andreasen thing. We got a lot of things together with this, the second book in the UFO book. And it may be, it's involving life after death, and it may be bigger than the first near-death book. The near-death was a cakewalk compared to this, Jeremy, because it's so multidimensionally layered, and it folds.
All right, so when can we expect that this might be available for us to put in our hands and read?
The first book took a lot out of me. I didn't even realize it. And the research is done. All I got to do is translate it so regular people can read it. I say no more than about a year. I want to do it right and tight, just like the first one. About a year, I guess. Yep.
Fantastic. Now, we only have a couple of minutes left, and so I want to give you the opportunity to maybe speak your mind about anything I have not asked you about tonight.
You've asked some good questions, and you let me take my time answering. I think we had a good interview. I would like to let the people know that with the changes in the physiology of the spirit body and the levels of consciousness and how that relates to time and space, whenever there's a change in the person's level of consciousness, like they're more consciously aware, like say you're aware that you're dreaming, a change in the physiology of your spirit body will also happen, and a change in the location or space that you're in. So whenever you come to a higher state of awareness, a real higher state of awareness, your location will change, and the physiology of your invisible spirit body will change. And those three always go in conjunction with each other. And neither one happens without the other one happening. And that's something that can be very useful. I guess that's good to talk to you again, Jeremy. You've been all right?
Oh, I'm better now than I was a couple of months ago. And so thank you for that. It's a pleasure to actually hear you once again. And we'll be keeping an eye on everything that you've got going. I'd love to have you back as, you know, you put that research together. That's going to be a fascinating time as well. But we've at least given the listeners a bit of a glimpse into some of that subject material tonight. So until we have a chance to chat again, Eugene, I wish you a good evening and take care, my friend.
Great. Thanks, Jeremy, and thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. That's Eugene Braxton, America's Mystic. You can click the link at my website, follow him on Facebook, and actually it would be like him on Facebook and follow him on Twitter. As far as the near-death experience goes, I have never had one myself, nor do I want to have a near-death experience or even a death experience. I've never been taken on board a craft, seen a UFO until last week. And I've got pictures of those if you want to see it. Actually, it was posted last week. I told you a bit of what happened, and it was an interesting thing. I wasn't expecting that it was actually going to happen, but nonetheless, I saw a UFO. I saw chemtrails. Speaking of chemtrails, we actually had a couple of comments from the Facebook tonight. Andrew says, my answer to the poll, which was whether or not you believe in chemtrails, insufficient empirical evidence to make a definitive conclusion with using actual science done with a neutral mind. And Sam says, I believe it has a lot to do with moisture pockets in the atmosphere, allowing exhaust particles to form long-lasting contrails. So that's what the Facebook audience is saying tonight. Until we talk to you twice next weekend, Saturday and Sunday, with my guests, Ken Pfeiffer and Tom Pettit on Saturday, and the great Preston Dedett on Sunday. I'm Jeremy Scott from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. You take care, my friends. Good evening and good morning now, East Coast.